Well, good morning. I am going to be teaching the first chapter of the Bodhicharya Avatara, the Bodhisattva's way of life. So the first three verses are a very traditional opening. So he starts out in a very traditional way with this four-part opening. So let me read the first two lines. When you start these traditional openings, the first thing you do is you pay respect, pay homage, or venerate those who have helped you get to this point, or it's often your teachers, or in this case, he pays homage or venerates, or offers his respect to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So the living Buddha as an example, the teachings, his teachings that it's like the tools you might need to engage on waking up bodhicitta, helping you to be free of old habits and fears. And the Sangha, which is, in this case, we're going to call it all of us, all of those who are on this path of awakening. So it goes like this. To those who go in bliss, that's the Buddhas, all those who have attained realization. The Dharmakaya they possess, so it's not just the teachings themselves, but also any realization you have of the teachings, any experience you have that goes along with the word free of habit, my habits, or any real actual experience or realization. And all their heirs, so that's the Sangha. And in this case, really what it refers to specifically is he venerates those who have realization, what they have realized, and their heirs means the bodhisattvas, those who are on this path, walking on this path. So that's the first part. It's to pay respect. And then the next two lines are, traditionally you would pledge to compose it and you would set the intention to finish. And in this case, he also tells you what he's going to talk about. So he says, according to the scriptures, in other words, he's saying, this is going to be based on the Buddhist teachings. It's not like something I made up. According to the scriptures, I shall now in brief describe the practice of the Bodhisattva discipline. So he says in brief, and he means basically he's going to take all the Mahayana Buddhist teachings and condense them into this teaching that he's about to give. And his subject is the practice of the Bodhisattva discipline, how you actually practice. The whole book is an instruction manual for how to awaken bodhicitta and then how to awaken it further and further and further. So also in this second two lines, he sets his intention to really do this. And intention is very important before you start anything. To set your intention, you're much more apt to stick with it and follow through. Then the verse 2 goes on with this four-part, very traditional, like his audience. I'll tell you in a moment who his audience were. I don't know. I'll tell you about his audience. in a moment. So, to them in whom this precious jewel of mind is born, to them I bow. So, bowing down to anyone of us who have even had a flash of lightning in the dark of night. I go for refuge to those springs of happiness who bring their very enemies to perfect bliss. This says, instead of the bodhisattvas seeing people as when they cause harm and they hurt the bodhisattva, then they experience themselves in hell. This says, from the point of view of the bodhisattvas, they wish even for the people who dislike them and are wanting to kill them, even those people, they wish to be free and have enlightenment. And so when Zhangzi Kenzi Rinpoche was teaching this, he told this funny story. He said that in Tibet, it was very traditional that if a Rinpoche came into the village and there were crowds and crowds of people so that they couldn't get up there to get a blessing, they would throw rocks at the Rinpoche in order for there to be a connection. Even a negative connection was considered a good thing with such a holy person. I thought that was hilarious. He said, we were doing our best to try to stop that way of thinking about things, but anyway, when the rocks hit us, we knew the intention was noble.
I have 6 children. I know about benefiting others. even when they're grown. But I realized that I've always been stuck on the Bodhisattva vow, and I didn't realize until this morning it's because I don't think I believe in the end of suffering at all.
Yeah.
And I live near Boston, so we've just come through the marathon bombing and all the amputations, and I know that samsara is going to be with me, and so what do I do?
Yeah. I was involved in a kind of like a retreat recently where we broke into groups and we were asked questions like, do you believe it's possible to attain enlightenment? Do you believe there can be an end of suffering? And that was really good to kind of grapple with that stuff. And I came out of it feeling something that I don't know if how many of you have heard of Glassman Roshi, Bernie Glassman. He does a lot of good work. He was asked this question and he said, I don't really believe, he was working with the homeless in Yonkers. He said, I don't really believe there's going to be an end to homelessness, but I go in every day as if it was possible. And then I work individual by individual. And that's sort of like Mother Teresa's approach, is she just wanted to help people die feeling loved. And her organization grew and grew, so there were more and more people doing the work. But it wasn't the end of poverty in Calcutta or anything like that. But you just do it anyway. You do it anyway and it changes you. And I always think there's a possibility of a sort of like tilting point. Is that what it's called? The tipping point. Yeah. And when it tips more in the direction of more people caring, it isn't that there'll be the end of suffering at the outer level, because after all, there's still going to be drought. There's still going to be hurricanes and all kinds of natural things, volcanoes erupting and so forth, that will cause a lot of suffering. You're also incurable diseases, being hit by cars, all kinds of things. It's not really talking about that going away. It's talking about how many people on the world could shift so that they began to not be just self-centered and began to look out and care about other people, and that would be what would bring them the greatest happiness and would bring society the greatest happiness. So you did also see in Boston something that's quite common, which is all those people that were running to help the people that had been hurt. So those are the kind of things that you look at rather than getting stuck in not believing it's possible. You just do what you can, and that makes a big difference.
So I think what I'm getting is I don't need to believe in the end of suffering. I just need to work towards it.
That's right.
Okay.
Exactly.
Thank you.
With a longing and like being thirsty for water.
Thank you.